Welcome to the Advanced Relationship Podcast, or if you're watching on YouTube, welcome to Bryce and Jenny's channel. And we're excited to be here talking about all things personal development, relationship development from a variety of different perspectives and angles and methods and models. Today, we're going to be talking about someone who's in the personal development field and who Bryce and I have both followed for a long time, known about her work. And her name is Byron Katie. Bryce, how did you first learn about Byron Katie and her work?
So my dad was reading Byron Katie's book. I think it was Loving What Is. And he learned about a 10-day workshop that she was holding in LA. So he invited me to go and I had been struggling. I was only 19 at the time. This is in 2008. And I wanted to do something to feel better because I was still feeling depressed and not knowing what to do with my life. So we went to this 10-day workshop and it was super intense, long 16-hour days, usually where we got up early and did meditation. And then she walked us through a lot of different experiences and challenges. And then we did workshops and writing exercises and partner practices and group experiences. And it really changed my life in a lot of ways. It gave me some new ways to think about judgments I have of myself or others. She has this whole process that we'll talk about that includes these four questions. And I've used this with clients. I also worked with one of her facilitators a few months after that. So this is something that I've incorporated into my work and our work. And it's just really powerful. I think, I think there's so much of our anxiety comes from disagreeing with reality is what she says. And so finding ways to love what is, even when it's painful, even when it doesn't make sense, even when it's hard, I think is the key to having a more fulfilling and meaningful life. Mm-hmm. So that's my experience.
I found out about Byron Katie in graduate school, and it was during a supervision session with one of my professors. So in my marriage and family therapy master's program, we had to do a certain number of sessions with clients, and then we had to record a certain number of those sessions, and then a supervisor would go through and kind of watch us do our work and give us feedback and tips and help us learn that way. It was actually a really awesome process. And one day we were in my professor's office and someone was showing a video of their session. I don't remember if it was me or someone else. And he pulled out Byron Katie's book and he said, "This might be a helpful way to think about this, or this might be a helpful tool you could use." And he said, "You know, even though this woman is not a therapist, sometimes people who aren't therapists also have really great ideas that can help us in our therapy work." I thought that was very cool of him, that he was just open to different ways of thinking about things. This actually isn't the book Loving What Is. Loving What is probably her most popular book and probably my favorite book of hers. This one is her book, I Need Your Love, Is That True? Which is also an awesome book. So at the time I didn't read her stuff, my professor just gave us a little handout with her four questions. And I was like, "Oh, that's cool." Didn't really think much more about that at that point. Then about 15 years ago, I ended up getting her book, Loving What Is, and started reading it. And at the time, I was going through a big change in my life with feeling really frustrated with the religion I had grown up in, which was the Mormon religion. Grew up in Utah, was born into that religion, and just started feeling more and more frustrated with things I was experiencing on Sunday at church or in that religion in general. So I got her book and started going through it, and it was like mind-blowing. Like you were saying, her stuff to me was just like, what? This is such an interesting, almost counterintuitive way to approach thinking about things and questioning our thoughts and our beliefs. And I'd never really even thought about the idea of questioning all of our thoughts and all of our beliefs. I mean, I kind of did as a therapist. I guess I knew that was one way to go, but watching her do it in the way she did it just opened up my mind to the power of being able to question our thinking.
And I'm thinking about one of the concepts that she kind of works with, where it's like, you take this idea that you have, like, I don't like that this thing is happening, right? And then you can look for the benefits of it happening, which so often is the case. Like you think about, you know, a lot of the times where we learn the most is where we were challenged the most, we experienced the most pain, and we see something come out of that. So it's like, how do you look at the benefits of what's happening? And then also like almost like welcoming that in, like I look forward to this happening more so that I can learn more, grow more, experience more. And yeah, it's a totally counterintuitive move to do with really painful things, you know, whether it's money, relationships, health, a lot of the big ones. It's like when you can look at something that seems like you don't want it to happen and actually try on a new set of clothing, like I want to try on what if I didn't have the story that this didn't need to be happening right now? What if I had a story that I wanted this to keep happening as long as it needs to happen so that X, Y, and Z can happen? Because there are benefits to every situation. We just have to look for them.
So I'm kind of curious, Brian, how would you describe her philosophy?
You know, it falls into the category of like an inquiry-based therapy where it's like asking questions that you normally wouldn't ask yourself to get more information and more awareness. You know, the first two questions of her four questions, the work that she has, and there's some more to that, are, is it true and can you absolutely know it's true? Because often I think when I and other people get anxious or like really feel really stuck, it's because we're believing a story and we believe 100% that it's true. And if we can create even a little bit of space in that to try on, maybe this isn't fully true. Maybe there's more to the story. I think that provides more space. I think it's really questioning our reality, right? And the stories that we tell ourselves about reality. That's how I would explain her process.
Yeah. And I love one of her quotes, and I don't know that I'll get it verbatim, but it's something around reality is always kinder than we might have thought. And I just love that. She also talks about something like the more clear your mind becomes, the more friendly your view of the world becomes. And I don't know if that's always true for everyone. Again, these are just her philosophies, but that's been true for me when I've applied the process and I do start to feel more clear. And it sometimes is like a feeling of waking up, or sometimes when I'm walking clients through an exploration process, whether it's her questions or questions that I've come up with or questions from other people, but kind of that process of being able to do the turnaround, or sometimes I call it the mirroring exercise. When you're going through that process, when you are able to do it in a way that it actually resonates, it will often feel like a waking up or a clicking in or a sudden like remembering or knowing of something.
Yeah. And I'm thinking about it as like, it is a way to come into more deeper presence with reality, because we're, you know, we have these really powerful brains, which are great to accomplish things. But the problem with them that I see is that they have their own attachment to our identity. So what we tend to do is our brain and mind makes up stories, and that becomes a part of our identity and who we are. And we believe those. We're story-based creatures that are understanding the world and making sense of it through our stories. So to be able to see that and then question them, work with them, even change them sometimes, or look at it from different angles, can really shift the way that we interact with reality.
Absolutely. And to be honest, I think that's probably the number one place that change happens. Like, we can do a lot of different practices and we can manage things in our life. And there's challenges in my life that I don't feel like I've gotten to the bottom of, and I don't feel like I've fully resolved yet. And so I can sometimes manage those things and do the best I can. And there's a part of me that thinks maybe one day if I can see more clearly what the belief is that's holding me back here and I could actually work with it. I think in my experience, once I can see the belief that's actually creating the pain and I can do the work on it and it shifts, it really does free things up.
Yeah.
But it can take time to get there. And sometimes as much as we want things to change and as much as we want to be free, all we can do is start with where we are and start in the present moment.
And I like what she does, and it's in line with a lot of what we're doing, whereas there's a lot more to relationships than I think we often see. It's not just like being with someone and learning about them. It's like every person is really a mirror into our own beliefs and our own operating system. So her process, I think specifically looking at judgments, are often ways that we're either judging ourselves or disowning a part of ourselves, you know, to fit whatever narrative we have about ourselves. So I love how she brings relationship into this, specifically through the judgments that we have about ourselves or the world.
Yeah. So I was curious. I have a quote here from her that I really like. And then I wanted to ask your opinion about something. So she says, "I'm a lover of what is, not because I'm a spiritual person, but because it hurts when I argue with reality." Mm-hmm. And I love that quote. What makes this process different from spiritual bypassing? Or how do you avoid spiritual bypassing while using her process?
Okay. Well, maybe first define so people understand what spiritual bypassing is, and I could jump in if I have something.
So spiritual bypassing is taking a personal development or relationship development tool and using it to actually ignore the experience of the present moment, or using it to bypass something that needs to be faced and something that needs to be looked at or resolved or acknowledged honestly.
Okay.
Something like that. Does that feel like an accurate summary of spiritual bypassing.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I would add that, you know, and this is why I think she calls her process the work, because if you're just saying things like, I love what is, and you're not really leaning into the emotional experience of it, creating space for it, doing some process to really work through it and understand it, then yeah, you're probably bypassing on some level. And you can do it with anything. Like, you could even use this process to spiritual bypass. And that's something where I think we always got to pay attention to, like where we may be thinking we're doing the work, but we're not really.
And that's what I found is, in my view, I use 4 steps when I'm working with clients. I think of her process as really in the 3rd step. So if I haven't done steps 1 or 2 enough, and I'm trying to push myself to do like a Byron Katie process or some kind of inquiry into my thinking, sometimes I'll feel like it'll feel like a brick wall and I'll just feel kind of stuck. So I have noticed sometimes in my life, I have to back up and I have to just allow myself to just be present with what is. I have to be present with pain. I have to be present with frustration, present with shame. I have to notice it in my body. I have to name it. I have to give it space to be there. And I notice if I can give it enough space without judging it or trying to spiritual bypass through it, then I'm going to start to get little indicators of what the stories are underneath the shame, underneath the pain, underneath. So I think sometimes for me, I like her process because I think it really works. And I think in order for it to work, you have to actually know what the thoughts are that are underneath those things.
Yeah. And I like what you're saying, because there's the opposite, or just the other layer there where, you know, it's possible to want the results so bad and to be doing the work, but then you're disagreeing with the reality that you're just not ready yet, or you're stuck, or you don't have all the information. And so again, like, the process just keeps working, right? It's not a A to B process. Mm-hmm. It's really continually working with what is, whether you're stuck or whether you have some big epiphany. It doesn't really matter, right? When you're just trying to be present to whatever's happening.
I like that.
Yeah.
Okay. So I wanted to talk a little bit about how we made the connection. Prior to us meeting, we were introduced, both of us, to Byron Katie. So for me, when I first met Bryce...
This is my pickup line.
It was the best pickup line for me. I don't know that there could have been another pickup line that was better for me. Do you want to talk about the pickup line?
Well, I didn't intend for it to be a pickup line. I didn't know Jen at all. We just met for coffee, and through the course of our, I don't know, hour and a half conversation, we were talking about personal development. She was in therapy. She was a therapist. I had worked in therapy. And so we connected, on our shared work. And one of us mentioned Byron Katie, and I said, oh, I went to her 10-day workshop and here's what we did. And I started talking about the exercises and experiences. And I think you just really, I didn't know it at the time, but I think that really just resonated with you. And you're like, oh, here's someone who can, I think you said self-reflect, like has the ability to reflect on himself and his thoughts. And that was something that I don't think you said you'd really experienced with any other partner. So yeah,
it really worked.
It had a big impact.
Yeah, when he said that, I just remember it kind of lit something up in my heart. And I remember being in a relationship, 2 relationships prior to Bryce, and thinking, like, I wanted to be there to support my boyfriend at the time. He was navigating some things with work. And I also found he would continually just want to like vent or like unload, but there was never any follow-up from that. There was never any ability to turn it around and self-reflect on himself. And I just remember thinking, like, I've got to find someone who can do what Byron Katie teaches. I mean, I actually had that thought. And what I meant by that is someone who can self-reflect and look at their part in their experience and how their thinking was impacting their experience. Yeah, it was a really big deal, I think, for me when you mentioned that you had been to her training and had some exposure to her work. And then I did experience, like, when we got together and started dating, which was pretty much right after that first date, coffee date we had, I did experience you as someone who was capable of questioning your thinking and your beliefs. Mm-hmm. And I think that is one of probably the most powerful skills that you can have, whether it's individual personal development you're doing or relationship development. If you do not have the ability to question your thinking, whether you're in a more grandiose position and like, I'm right, or whether you're in a more collapsed, shrunken position, like, I'm wrong, if you can't question that either way and look into how do you get more information and look at the truth, then it just can be really difficult.
Pretty much everyone has had this experience where someone comes to you and they're complaining or venting. And I think we can handle a fair amount of that and have empathy. But eventually our bodies will start to tighten up or will kind of shut down and it'll be hard to listen to because, you know, if someone's just in a pattern and they're stuck in their own mental loop or whatever, like they start to actually like lose connection with us. And that's why it can feel hard to relate to them. So I think the way to get back into relationship a lot of times is letting people into our internal world, right? Like, okay, why is this bothering me? What am I feeling right now? What are the stories I'm believing about myself or this person or this situation that aren't really true? I can tell for me, then I want to lean in. I want to know more. I want to, you know, it gives me the ability to maybe even help you or learn more about me because you're doing the self-reflective work. And, you know, people always learn about themselves when someone else is doing that, right? Because there's so much of this life experience that we share. I love talking to people that can do this because it's interesting. It's not that interesting to hear people share the same story in different ways over and over.
Yeah, to share the conditioning, the tape that plays over and over.
Yeah.
It can start to feel, boring.
Yeah, drama can feel good. You know, like I know that sometimes it's like, oh, let's talk about this. And we can get looped in together about that mm-hmm. stuff. But I think with both of us now that we can do this, we can stop and say, hey, why are we so looped into this? Is this how we want to be talking about this right now? What is this like? Where is this hooking me and really like bothering me? What is it about it? And I think that just leads to more fulfilling, intimate, connected, interesting conversation.
Mm-hmm. And I like that you talk about that idea of what's hooking me, because I think one of Byron Katie's perspectives is anytime we get hooked or anytime we are suffering, that's an indicator that we are believing something that is misaligned with reality. There is somewhere we're not seeing reality accurately. And that would be one way I would summarize her perspective, which I don't know if that's what she would say, but that's what I would say. I think it is from hearing her talk.
Yeah.
So if you are interested in learning more about her work, she has a website called The Work. So if you go to www.thework.com. She has videos, she has worksheets where you can actually go through her process totally free. It's just a chance to learn these four questions. And I think that's really what it seems like kind of her mission has been, is to bring these four questions to people so that they can start to use them and get the benefits.
Yeah, and I'd suggest not going into them cold, like watch some of her YouTube videos and how she walks people through it, because if you were to just answer the questions and, you know, just kind of go through it intellectually, then it might not make a whole lot of sense. So I think it's important to see how she works through them too.
I think that was probably true when I got those questions in graduate school. I remember thinking like, oh, this is cool. But it didn't really click until I watched her do it.
Right.
Yeah. Yep. So let's go over what the four questions are.
Okay.
And Bryce, you've got them memorized, right?
Yep. Yeah, I've worked through them a lot. So the first question is, well, first you have to identify the judgment that you have. So there's this judge your neighbor worksheet where you say, I feel blank about blank because they whatever, right? And so then really what you're working with is what they did. That's the judgment. They are a this or they did that. So the first question is it true that they are a this? And so it could be like, they are mean to me, or they're a mean person. Okay. The second question is, can you absolutely know that it's true? Which kind of sounds like the same question, but it's like really sitting back a little bit more and tapping into how certain are you that this story is true? So it's, is this true? Can you absolutely know that it's true? Would you sign off to know that this is always the case all the time? And sometimes they're different answers. Sometimes they're the same. Third question is, how do you react when you believe this thought that they are this? So how do you treat yourself? What coping strategies do you have? How do you treat them? All that. Usually you want at least three examples of how you react when you're believing this story. And then the fourth question is, who would you be without this story? So imagining that you cannot have this story, that this person is a this, like what would it do for your life? And how would you react? What would it feel like? So often people will say, oh, well, I feel more free. I feel more relaxed. I'd feel, you know, safer, whatever it is. So those are the initial four questions of doing the work.
Mm-hmm.
Is that how you remember it?
Yep. Yeah. And she's got, after the four questions, then she does what she calls a turnaround. And that's where you'll flip the thought and look at different angles of what other ways to think about that thought. So instead of this person's a this, it could be this person's not a this. It could be I'm a that. It could be different ways of thinking about it.
Yeah. So there's essentially three ways that you turn it around. The first is the opposite of what the judgment is. So the opposite of mean could be they're nice.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd look for three examples of how they have been nice to you or to someone else. The second way is that you turn it back to yourself. How do you treat yourself in the way that you're judging that you that they treat you? So how are you mean to yourself? What would be three examples of them being, or you being mean to yourself? And then the third one is, how do you treat them? So three examples of how, even if it's in your mind, like how do you treat them in a mean way? And you're looking for three examples. And sometimes it takes some work. I think this is more difficult. You know, we did this at a workshop once and someone was, they brought in the idea of like, well, what if you were raped? And I think that, you know, I think with really extreme situations, it can be hard to do this. And I wouldn't recommend that you do this with really extreme situations. I think there's a way to still tease out some important pieces there, but this is more just with general judgments that you have about others. And again, like there might not always be examples, but I found every time I've done this, there is, if I look for them, right? Like there is a way that if I feel like I'm being mistreated, that I'm also mistreating myself in some ways, or I have a pattern of doing that, of course, like everyone does. And then I might be really judging them in my head. And, you know, that kind of puts me into a space to have more empathy or compassion for, like, you know, how they might feel when they're with me. Mm-hmm. So, and then also, yeah, just kind of like equalizing, like, yes, someone might have some behavioral patterns that really don't feel good, but they, you know, most often people have really nice qualities about them too. And so we can also put attention on that. And it creates more of a narrative of a whole person and not just someone that is just a this.
Mm-hmm. And her work doesn't mean that you don't protect yourself. It doesn't mean you don't stand up for yourself. It doesn't mean you don't, you know, move forward with whatever boundaries need to be in place. Again, her work is more, how do you do all of that and work on the mind such that you can go through the whole process of protecting yourself in appropriate ways and setting appropriate boundaries without resisting reality in such a way that you suffer through that whole process. So her work isn't so that you don't set boundaries. It's so that you can set boundaries in a healthy way with yourself, with others, and most importantly, with your mind.
Right. Yeah. I would say it's more of a personal process more than anything. She doesn't talk about how to talk to someone else mm-hmm. as much. It's more, how do you work with your own mind?
Yeah. So I wanted to talk about one or more ways that her work has felt meaningful to each of us in our life. Mm-hmm. And so do you want me to go first? Or do you want
yeah,
me to
go
first?
Ahead.
So one of the things I find is I actually use her stuff more than any other model in terms of just like how frequently I use it. So just yesterday we were in a group coaching call, or no, actually you weren't there. I was facilitating a practice call with our group coaching program and something came up and I actually walked myself through the process real quick during a moment of that call and did a quick turnaround and it was really nice. So I use her process really regularly and I use her process for all sorts of beliefs. So it could be a judgment about another person. It could be a judgment about myself. It could be just about how I think life should be. And then I'll actually walk those thoughts and those beliefs through her four questions and the turnaround. So one of the most impactful, meaningful moments, because I started reading her book, Loving What Is, while I was in that struggle with how do I navigate this religious stuff? I remember I had finished her book and I remember being in a church meeting one day and in the Mormon church or the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, it's the same thing if you ever hear it talked about. The way it was at that time was you would go to church every Sunday for 3 hours. It has since changed in the last 14 years to where you only go for 2 hours, which was a huge change for the Mormon church, but I was out by then. So when I was there, you'd go to church every week for 3 hours, and I had done that my entire life. I only missed a Sunday here and there if I was sick, and that was it. I remember sitting in a church meeting, and it was a mid-singles ward. I was single at the time. I was about 30 or 31, and they had wards that were just for... They had like groups that would meet on Sunday that were just for single people. But I remember I was sitting there by myself in a chapel with hundreds of people. And I remember someone got up and was talking in a way that was kind of shaming of themselves and kind of communicated some shaming messages. And I just remember thinking, I wish we didn't talk about spirituality this way. I wish we didn't talk about ourselves this way. I wish that this church was not so fear-based. I wish that the church leaders took care of our spirituality by not perpetuating these messages themselves, by not supporting these types of messages. And I remember thinking like that would be a big change for this church to really adjust to the type of spirituality that I was wanting. And I remember thinking, but why, you know, why don't they do it? And then I did a turnaround in that moment. I said, well, Jenny, are you willing? Are you willing to make all the changes you would want these church leaders to make so that you can live a spiritual life that feels more safe, more fulfilling, more real to you? And it was just like, it kind of like broke the walls all of a sudden. I was just like, oh geez, like, yeah, I want them to make all these big changes, but would I be willing? Would I be willing to like really turn my whole life upside down to do what I would have to do to leave this religion I grew up in, where all of my nuclear family is still a part of? The boyfriend I had at the time was active Mormon. Like, would I be willing to uproot my life and potentially lose relationships and go through all these changes to do that? And I just knew in that moment that it was up to me. I'm like, if I'm ever going to expect anyone else to create change, I have to be willing to do it first. Whew. And it was really intense. And that was the last time I ever attended church as a Mormon. And I would say, I just feel a lot of gratitude to Byron Katie for being able to give me that courage. Like, her process really allowed me to see that if I want other people to be able to do that, I have to be able to lead that.
Yeah, that's a big one. Yeah. And it's been a big part of your life.
It's been a very big part of my life.
Yeah.
And that was huge because it, you know, opened me up to meet Bryce and for me to open up my spiritual life and create a type of spirituality that was more aligned with where I was at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. And especially in that ideology where it's like you're kind of conditioned to give up your autonomy in so many ways. And it sounds like that was a moment where you were able to take it back and be like, I have the power to make my own choices and decide how I want to be spiritual and how I want to live my life. Mm-hmm. It's big.
It is big.
Yeah.
And it's really hard. It's hard to turn it around and take care of yourself first sometimes, knowing that people might follow and people might not follow. And all you can do is at least lead your life the way you want to lead it. And that will open you up. That was like a bigger example. And then there were even smaller examples. So I'm going to give a small example too, just so you can see how this works with little things too. I also remember one day living with roommates and looking around, and one of my roommates had left like some piles, different places of just things.
I know someone like that. I'm jumping ahead.
That's why I was so...
Just jumping to the turnaround.
I remember looking around and thinking like, oh, she's been leaving so many piles around. And then again, Byron Katie's stuff came to my mind and I thought, well, Jenny, let's look around and see if you have any piles. And, you know, it could even be emotionally or any other way, but I just was looking at it physically at this time. And I looked around and I could see my piles of stuff. And I thought, you know, I can bring this up to this roommate and let her know and make a request for her to like take care of her piles. But I can't do that until I've taken care of my piles. And just doing that released the judgment. It like released the judgment. I started to focus more in my own lane, take care of my own piles. And then I never even brought it up with her. I think it was just something that resolved itself. It wasn't like an ongoing issue ever that I remember happening. Yeah. Big things and little things I've used it with.
Yeah. And sometimes it instantly dissolves judgments, which that's awesome when that happens. And sometimes it takes some time, and it doesn't mean that you don't have judgments or that you stay in a place where you're like, I don't like this. I don't like that. I don't like this idea, or I don't like this person. I think it's totally fine to be there too.
Yes. And that's where I think it's really important. I like my clients to understand, if this process works, great. But if it doesn't, you've got to back it up into these other steps and just practice presencing what is, practice presence in the struggle. You've got to just make space, because you can explore it and that can work, but it has to be the right time and you have to be ready and you have to have enough information and inner support and support from the outside to be able to do all that. Mm-hmm. So what about you? What's one way that her work's been meaningful to you?
So, well, I'll start with an experience that I had at the workshop. And I know that when I first left the workshop, they wanted to kind of keep it sacred and not share some of the things that we did there, just because other people might be coming in and they wanted it to be probably somewhat of a surprise. So you couldn't like prep for some of these things, because I think they were really powerful and totally safe. But also, yeah, I think there's something about like not knowing what's coming and then being like, oh, like you want me to do this, and really just going for it without any preparation. But one of the things that we did on the last day or second to last day is they brought us on a bus to the Santa Monica Pier, and we didn't bring anything with us, no phone, no wallet. And the only instructions were that we could only talk to say, I'm hungry and can I sit with you? Those are the only two things. And I remember being like really confused by that. And I appreciate the simplicity of the instructions, because that's really, that was the whole practice. And then, you know, whatever happens, happens. But we were, you know, so we were out on the Santa Monica Pier, you know, a couple hundred of us just kind of spread out, doing our own thing. And I think it was 6 or 8 hours that we were out there, and just the amount of anxiety that came up, you know, at that point I was really questioning a lot of my stories, and the story that I must seem so weird now, this is boring, or what do I do with my time? Or should I, you know, I'm hungry. Do I tell someone I'm hungry and just say that? And like, what the hell are they going to think about me if I just say that? I actually never said it. I was just like too freaked out. I did tell a couple of people, can I sit with you? And they said, yeah, or I did ask them, and I sat with them, and I remember it felt so tense, but it was totally safe, right? I'm just leaning into this experience of just being there and being with whatever stories I have that come up in this experience. And so it was really powerful in a lot of ways. So I wanted to share that one. Oh, and then all of us at the end with Byron Katie just walked about a half mile down the Santa Monica Pier, a group of 200 people, and we didn't say a word. Everyone turned and was like looking at us and like, what are these people doing? And we were just walking quietly, 200 people. I mean, it was just crazy how just silence and stillness could create such a reaction from people. And I think people kind of got it too. Some people were confused, but I think a lot of people are like, oh, because we don't see that much. We don't see people just sitting quietly, especially in big groups. So that's one that was really impactful, really like launched me into a new phase of understanding myself and really leaning into my fears. The second one has probably been, I've always been more introverted and shy and quiet, especially in groups. And I think one of the judgments that I've had is that like people that talk a lot or take up a lot of space, I've had judgments towards them, and I wasn't really even aware of it until I learned this process. And I started to see that like really a lot of what that's about is that, you know, the judgment is that you're taking up too much space, and then there's not space for me. And I think when I was able to turn that around and see how like really what I'm doing a lot of times is as I'm judging them, I'm also judging myself. You're too shy. You're too quiet. You should speak up more. I've disowned the part of me that can speak up and make space for myself and ask for someone's attention because I've had a story that like, oh, that's not okay. That's wrong. That's selfish or whatever. So that's another really impactful story that I've worked through more. And now I feel much more confident in social situations. I like to say I've conquered my social anxiety. I used to be so nervous to talk to people. I was like the quietest kid in class. My parents would always say, Bryce, you know, a man of few words, because I was just quiet and I didn't get it. But I was really just frozen, you know? And I think having conquered, for the most part, my social anxiety now, I get that so much of it was about the judgment of others taking up space and my own disowning of the part of me that really wants attention, wants to speak up.
Really beautiful to hear you talk about it.
Yeah. Yeah. And you've seen that, you know, like, cause we've been together for 9 years. So Jenny's seen me constantly lean into that, you know, obviously doing a public video, leading workshops and retreats and groups. I mean, I've had to do this a lot. If I want to do this stuff, I have to confront that.
Yeah. It's really powerful to watch. Yeah.
Or making new friends and building a community like we have here in our new home of a couple of years, St. George, Utah. Yeah, I've had to lean into that a lot.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing.
You're welcome.
All right. So if you're interested in checking out Byron Katie's work, I will link her website, The Work, down below. And you'll also see info on how to join our newsletter if you're interested in getting really high quality personal development, relationship development info delivered to your inbox every week, and where you can find out more about whatever videos we're doing.
Yep. And more offers, like we're doing some in-person stuff here. So if you want to get together with us in person, we'll have info on that. And we do a lot of things online, so you can join from anywhere.
All right. I think that's it, huh?
Yeah, it's complete.
All right. Take care. See y'all.
Okay. Bye.